Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the BRC's Brexit podcast. This week, Brexit, rolling extensions or last chance saloon. We reflect on the events of last week, a tumultuous week at Westminster and in Brussels, culminating in the deferral of the no-deal Brexit, the removal of the 12th of April as the default date, replacing it with Halloween. And I'm joined in suitable Halloween spirit by my great colleague, Aidan Conley, the director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium.
Surely you're not saying that I'm that scary. Good afternoon, William.
Yep, so is Brexit now a zombie, or is this the night of the living Brexits? That's going to be the discussion that we have in this podcast. Let's try and sum up what's been an extraordinary week. So firstly, Parliament passed the EU Withdrawal Act 2019, which bound the Prime Minister to ask for an extension of a length required by Parliament. As it turned out, on Tuesday, Parliament simply endorsed the Prime Minister's request in her letter to Donald Tusk from last Friday, which was for an extension of a couple of months to the 30th of June. All eyes then on Brussels on Wednesday night when the European Council met. First of all, hearing from the Prime Minister on what she was looking for and her plan to take the process forward, these cross-party discussions she's having with the Labour front bench. Then the 27 met over dinner for a fairly tumultuous session, at which it was decided that the extension should not be a year in length, as many as 17 member states had proposed and thought was right around the table, but instead, following the intervention of President Macron, a compromise put together with a flexible extension lasting until the 31st of October. And I think this extension, whilst it's been welcomed certainly by the retail industry and many others, any extension is better than no deal on the 12th of April, that much is certain. It has been kind of called neither fish nor fowl. And the reason for that being that it might be seen as perhaps too short to resolve the underlying political problems at Westminster in terms of ratifying the withdrawal agreement and working out where on earth they want to go in terms of the future relationship, which is the big bit of the jigsaw that has never really been addressed properly or resolved in the House of Commons. But maybe it's not long enough to deal with some of the political and democratic events. So 6 months makes it very unlikely that you can hold a referendum in that time if that's what MPs decided. Also, it makes it very unlikely that you can have a sort of change of prime minister and a change to a general election within that period. So if we don't get political agreement in this process between the Prime Minister, Leader of the Opposition, which is based around two things, remember. Firstly, that they produce a joint approach, a joint plan, which is then put to MPs to be voted upon. So that's option one. Option two, if that doesn't yield an outcome, is to go for binding indicative votes, a process in Parliament that would produce a winning option, alternative to the current flow of the future relationship in the political declaration. But that only happens if both leaders accept that that process is binding. And again, we have very little idea at this stage that both leaders would agree to that being a binding outcome. So that's where the process lies at the moment. Relief, I think, from business. Relief, I think, from the country as a whole, but still huge uncertainty. No deal is not off the table for the 31st of October.
I think that's a huge point that you're making, William, about the fact that legally, if we do not get a deal, we're still heading towards no deal. As far as our industry is concerned, It's great that it's not a 9-month extension, because although it may sound mercenary of us, it's our busiest time of year around Christmas, and that would have been a real disaster for our industry. However, you're completely right to point out how short a time space is. One, if you look at the 2 years that we've had, they've went very, very quickly. But the fact that we have these Easter holidays, the fact that we have the summer recess, we really only have about 7.5-8 full working weeks between now and Halloween. Mm-hmm. And that's how much of a stressful situation we are in. Now, as responsible employers, responsible retailers, we're glad that MPs and MEPs and all the people in the Article 50 team and the negotiators on all sides are going to have, you know, their few days at rest over Easter for their own mental health and for ours, to be honest. However, the thing is, we cannot allow the foot to be taken off the pedal. We cannot allow. In the same way that we have seen time frittered away on things that are quite simply unicorns, we've already seen the Malthouse guys, those alternative arrangements working group, put their head up. They were in Brussels with the DUP yesterday, and again they're shouting about these alternative arrangements. We put a challenge out to them many months ago, ourselves, Manufacturing, NI, and Freight Transport Association in Northern Ireland. Come and meet us. Come and meet the people who will actually be affected by these alternative working arrangements. They still haven't taken that up. There's a grave worry that we will end up spending so much time looking at these things that don't bear fruit, and as you quite rightly call them, William, these unicorns, that we will fritter away that time. It's great that we've got an extension. There is a certain sigh of relief that we didn't crash out today. But the main thing is that our message is the same as it was 2 years ago. It's the same today that we need a day.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we've been doing recently, I know I spoke at the Retail Week conference the week before last, is to kind of spell out some of the realities here, which is that if the UK isn't going to stay in the EU and it is going to leave. And if it wants to leave in an orderly way, then, you know, the withdrawal agreement is the bridge to that new relationship. Now, I think the problem at Westminster is that, particularly on the Labour side, some Labour MPs feel, well, if I'm going to get on a bridge, I want to know where it's taking me. I want to know where the destination point of the bridge is. And that's why there's been so much focus, I think, on the Labour side about the political declaration, about signposting what kind of final status relationship would be the alternative to continuing EU membership. And that's where a lot of these cross-party discussions are around. So what are we hearing from sources off in terms of what is being discussed? Well, I think, firstly, these cross-party talks do sound very substantial indeed. They are getting into the nitty-gritty of the different concepts, customs unions, single market, different types of customs union. And I think it's important to remember that if a majority of MPs were to support some changes to the political declaration, so if they do coalesce behind a destination point at the end of that bridge, the Commission have said they could negotiate the changes relatively quickly. But the other point to remember is the signpost in the political declaration is very different from the detail of how a customs union or a customs arrangement, we understand the Prime Minister's preferred term, and of course customs union doesn't appear within the Irish protocol, despite the fact that one of the key parts of the backstop is a UK-wide customs union. So one of the issues here is that if MPs do come along behind a particular outcome, the detail of that only gets negotiated when the UK is in the transition period. And that's perhaps another point which we should cover in this. There's been a lot of questions, I know, from our member companies this week, and it's been an issue in the media. What happens, given that the UK is now in an extended period of EU membership, what happens to the transition period? Well, there were some very slight technical changes that were made to the withdrawal agreement this week, really dealing with the exit date, because 29th of March had been baked into the withdrawal agreement. That's been tweaked slightly simply to refer to a departure date. But the thing that hasn't been changed is, of course, the transition. And so this would be the standstill trading period whereby all the rules of the customs union and the single market would continue to apply in the UK as at the moment. Still the ability for companies to enforce these rules before domestic courts if there are any contractual issues or legal issues. And the thing about the transition is it is due to end in December 2020. So if the UK were to leave on the 31st of October, that means the transition would only go on at first look until December 2020. And the final trading relationship would have to be agreed in that period. But that's not the whole story, because, of course, within the withdrawal agreement, there's an extension clause for the transition. So it could go on until December 2022. And I think it really does look that if the UK does leave with a deal on the 31st of October, that the full length of that transition period would have to be used. That would have to give around just under 3 years to negotiate that final trading relationship. And that also doesn't just include trade. It's also going to deal with defence cooperation, security, science, research.
It's quite important to say that should it be that movement of the transition period to make it longer, should it be December 2020, the one thing we are certain about is that both William and I will be working on this either until we retire or drop dead from exhaustion, one of the two.
I'm thinking which one might come first, Aidan. It's been quite a fraught period, this. So that's the process that's going on in London. We'll see if it yields some benefits in terms of an agreed solution or an agreed process in Parliament. But I think it is very clear that, you know, really this process of trying to work out where you're going to at the end of the bridge, not even so much the detail of it, but even where you're going. Really, this is something that almost should have happened at the start of the process, not the end. But we are where we are, and it's really important, I think, to try and get a parliamentary majority for something and to go through this process. If none of these options work, then it is possible, because what the council didn't do this week was say this is the last possible extension. So they didn't say it's last chance saloon. And we could have the possibility, even now, of having some rolling extensions further. Now, it was really interesting what happened around the council table. You had Chancellor Merkel saying that the UK is a friend of the EU27, should be given a chance and another chance and another chance if necessary. To resolve this, but other member states, principally France, taking a different view, looking at the risks to the EU of this prolonged uncertainty and having rolling extensions one after the other. So if there was another application, if we get no political agreement over the spring, over the summer, and as Aidan said, there's not a lot of time to get there, but if we get no political agreement, we could end up going back to the council on the 17th of October seeking a further extension. And that is one of the possible outcomes that could come from this. I think one of the other issues is to look at the impact that this has been having on the wider economy and, of course, for retailers in particular, in terms of no-deal preparations. We know that members have spent a lot of money to get all their systems in place for customs, VAT, get all the supply chains sorted out as efficient and lean as possible to deal with any disruption from no deal. But now, of course, the immediate risk has been removed, but there is potentially a cliff edge on the 31st of October. So we have this very difficult period, 6 month period to navigate and get through. In terms of looking at no-deal contingency planning. And Aidan, this issue about potential another period of no-deal contingency planning ahead of October, it's a real issue in Northern Ireland, isn't it?
It certainly is. In Northern Ireland, you know, it's not just 20 years of the Good Friday Agreement that's given us these integrated supply chains. It's 40 years of of being members of the EU. So we're not only talking about that how we move our goods changes in the case of no deal, and all those preparations that it's like a watch that has been wound up really, really tight, and we need to sort of release it now. But again, we're going to have to build up the closer we get to no deal again. If I give you a couple of quick examples of how integrated we are and how much damage a no deal would mean as a hard border. Bailey's, one of our signature drinks here in Northern Ireland, that actually has five movements in it across the border with the different ingredients. Another one which is a wonderful example is from Northern Ireland Food and Drink Association. They have a value cottage pie for one that actually has seven movements on it. So for example, the cheese topping, the milk for that will start in Northern Ireland, be processed in the Republic of Ireland, and actually come back up to be on the finished article. The beef in itself has three movements. The oil comes across the land bridge from the EU. So if there are not just tariffs and customs, but if there are those non-tariff barriers, those things like checks, like delays, which can be a huge amount, up to 29% on food and drink. Each of those makes things more costly. They've averaged it out. So an average, that cottage pie at £2.80 could be up to £3.80 or £4 in price. And it is that simple as far as what no deal means for Northern Ireland. It's not simply some price rises. It's a complete disintegration of our supply chains here, and it affects people in Great Britain and in Dublin just as much as it does in Belfast, because of the huge amount of agri-food ingredients and agri-food finished product that we as retailers buy from Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much coverage about, you know, customs unions and single market and sanitary and phytosanitary checks and rules. I mean, fundamentally, it's about having to sort of separate milk from Northern Ireland, from milk coming from the Republic that might be part of a kind of common delivery and an uplift run for a company in terms of making a product like butter, or indeed that cottage pie that you've just talked about there, Aidan. And so I think one of the things that's really important that we make use of this period that's been granted is to explain and be very clear about the different concepts that exist, the different choices that policymakers and MPs have got ahead, and the consequences it has. So if you don't have a customs arrangement where you've got the same tariffs and the same rules of origin, you have to check in terms of goods coming into the Republic of Ireland, where the origin of those goods was and whether tariffs have been paid. So those are two checks. And there's another 61 checks that come from the single market, including the sanitary and phytosanitary checks on products of animal origin, milk, yogurt, cheese, fish, beef, pork, lamb. Many, many products would come into that. It's also the VAT checks. It's also the excise checks. And that's why if you are going to have genuinely frictionless trade, not only in the island of Ireland, but between the UK as a whole and the EU27, you need to have a solution which deals with the whole range of checks that would be involved in that. I think, as you said, Aidan, it's the non-tariff barriers that present even more of a hurdle and even more cost for retailers and for consumers than even the tariffs have done. And that's why our membership are saying we can't leave on a no deal scenario, and we need to preserve our supply chains. We need to preserve our existing trading terms. We need to have tariff-free trade, and we need to have frictionless trade as well.
And that's a message that's really been echoed in Dublin, both with retailers and the political class down there as well. And what they're saying is that they have a certain amount of relief, and that again it was not an no-deal Brexit, that we didn't come crashing out. But they have a bit of a head scratching moment going on at the moment because of this huge amount of talk just about a customs union, and they're very clear that they understand that while, you know, the EU and the Republic of Ireland have to protect their customs union and their single market, for there to be frictionless trade, all this talk of a customs union doesn't float. It doesn't work unless we have that high level of alignment and that single market that allows us to be sure of, like you talked about, the rules of origin, and that those SPS checks are up to scratch.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of work for us to do in the coming weeks. I think we can wish you all a very happy Easter, time for at least a couple of days feet up, at the very least. We're off to have a celebratory Baileys that it's not no deal, and we'll wish you all a happy Easter and see and speak to you soon. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.